like monkey land, a bothersome, troublesome place. Burmese land is like monkey land. Listen, I'll tell you so.
The thing about song poems that is the most striking quality to me is it's obviously modeled after actual music. It's actually in the style of rock or pop. So it's got something that is extremely familiar about it. At the very same time, due to the circumstances of the lyrics and the way that these things are slapped together, make it one of the strangest, most unfamiliar things that you've ever heard in your life. You've heard nothing like it, ever.
It's a clip from a documentary film called Off the Charts, the Song Poem Story. Song poems start with small ads in the back of magazines. These ads invite people to send in their poems. The ads say that your poems may earn money for you. The reality is that the poems will only earn money for the companies running the ads. That's because you have to pay to have your poems set to music. The results are called song poems. Jamie Meltzer is the director of the documentary film Off the Charts, and he says these budding songwriters can be anyone.
These are just ordinary people, and there are many reasons why they might do it. It might just be a hobby. It might be something that they're looking to get into the music business. Of course, this isn't a way to get into the music business, but they don't know that. And they're generally people really on the margins who are just sort of expressing, you know, something that they feel they have to express, and that's kind of the beauty of it. It's sort of a window into, you know, what an ordinary person thinks should be a song or should be a poem. And then you combine that with this company that's just out to make a buck. And the results are pretty interesting.
Putting together your film, you went to meet a lot of people on both sides of that equation, I guess. Can you describe for me one of the people who writes the poem, somebody you met?
Well, there's this guy in Iowa. His name's Gary Forney, and he's been a poet ever since he was a teenager. And he started doing song poems. He saw an ad in the back of a tabloid magazine and sent in a poem that he had lying around. And he really liked what he got back. He doesn't play instruments, and until recently he didn't sing. So it was a way of him for him to turn poetry into songs. And I think he really responded to the fact that with a song, you're communicating with more people, and it's a much easier, sort of an easier way to get your message out. Whereas a poem is a more solitary activity, a song can be shared.
So what does he write about?
So he writes about, he says, you know, the things that concern him, his family, what's going on around him in Iowa. But he'll also mix stuff up, and he has a couple crazy songs about, like he says, he'll write about ordinary things like his dog or something, but he'll say, you know, I might write about aliens stole my dog or something just to make it interesting to other people.
Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you hear my song? Hey, Mr. Spaceman, bring back my dog.
Isn't he the one in your film who was singing with his son?
Yeah, he and his son. His son is sort of almost the opposite of Gary. He's really into, you know, heavy metal, hard rock, and Gary's more of a folksy kind of guy. But they get together and sort of work that out and play more on Gary's side of things. Yeah, they decide that instead of doing song poems, instead of sending their lyrics out, they're going to do it themselves. So they take their songs to a local, I guess it's a sort of folk fair in Iowa, and present it to the audience there.
This little song's called Chicken Insurrection. This here's a little ditty about some chickens and me, and how I got in trouble the day they all got free. I took a job out in the country, they paid me in mass whiskey. Just keep an eye upon some chickens, didn't seem too hard to me. Well, there's chickens in the cornfield, in fact, chickens everywhere. Chickens plotting secrets, and chickens hatching plans. Of chickens driving Cadillacs to Washington, D.C. A chicken insurrection.
Seems to me they maybe should have practiced a little more before their performance.
The way I had to approach it was really not to judge anyone in the film, because I just wanted to approach everyone as if basically that the product didn't matter. And the great thing about song poems is these people are really, you know, putting the effort out to express themselves. And that's what Gary's doing as well. And I think it's really brave to attempt to express yourself when the world isn't really giving you much encouragement back. And that's sort of the position he found himself in, and sort of had to, you know, believe in himself. And I think he does. And I think any artist has to believe in what they're doing, maybe even to the point of delusion, which may be the point that Gary might be at, some people might say.
Your film includes a tribute to a song poem composer who's considered one of the greats, the late Rod Keith. What was it about Rod Keith that was so terrific?
Well, there was a couple things that made Rod great and made him stand out above the rest of the people doing this. I think he really put a lot of himself into the songs. I mean, and some of the other people do that as well, where you just, you know, you can approach these things as sort of a joke. You know, a lot of the lyrics are very weird or funny. But I think Rod really just said, okay, well, I'm going to approach this as sort of sincerely as possible and give it my all and put my heart into it. And then the other thing is he was just a master musician and could play a ton of different instruments and could kind of do it all. So it was almost like he was doing the whole thing himself in an age where people just didn't do that. And he played an instrument, was one of the earliest people playing a chamberlin, which is kind of like an analog keyboard with loops on it. And he played this instrument, also called the mellotron, later, in a way that no one did. I mean, it was usually used as a backup or a filler instrument, like playing like a symphony or trumpet sound. But Rod would use this thing, you know, as the entire band, and it just gives a sound that you've never heard really anything like it.
Natives have been dancing, they jump in Tahiti. They learn the newbie, it's got them going wild. Pushing and a shaking, their beads and bones rattling. Witch doctor head under a native child.
Did he work for one of these companies, or did he run one of them? Did he actually solicit lyrics from people?
No, he wasn't on that end. He worked for a couple different companies. I think the main one was Preview Records and MSR Records, which were the biggest ones in the 60s and 70s. And he was just their staff composer and musician, and he also sang on a lot of the songs. So he wasn't involved at all with the customers, I don't think.
It's interesting, isn't it, that with that much talent, why didn't he just write the songs himself and make a career out of this?
Well, apparently, I talked to some of his friends, and some of them are in the film, and what they said was that, you know, he really wanted to be a classical composer, which is about as far as you can get from song poem stuff. So it's unfortunate, but he never, he just sort of got locked into doing this song poem stuff, and it was a way for him to make money, and he was never able to express what was truly in his musical heart, I guess.
There's another of your, the people you talk about in the film, his name was Singletary?
Yeah, his first name is pronounced Shalar Juan Singletary.
Tell me about him.
He's, I think, probably one of the best lyricists in the film. He wrote a song called Nonviolent Taekwondo Troopers and another one called
Wait a minute. Nonviolent Taekwondo Troopers?
Yeah, and the interesting thing is actually in the song, it doesn't refer to anything in the title. It has nothing to do with nonviolent Taekwondo Troopers at all. It has to do with thanking God for Kung Fu Bicycles and Priscilla Presley. So I don't know if I can actually explain what that song's about, but it's a great song.
Andrew Loria, show yourself. Come and live a spirit, Jesus Christ. Thank Jehovah for Kung Fu Bicycles and Priscilla Presley.
Do they tend to write about certain things, certain subjects that they take up time and again?
Well, it's interesting because the one interesting thing about song poems is it's not the stuff that you would hear on everyday pop radio. There's been a couple of albums, Odes to Presidents. There was a series of albums about President Jimmy Carter in the 70s, and mostly disco songs about Jimmy Carter. There was tributes to Elvis. That there's, you know, topical issues that people are responding to. And like if someone, you know, like when Elvis died, the song poem business just exploded, and it was one of the biggest times. And Princess Di, and, you know, I think after September 11th, there's been a lot of songs about that. So it's really just a way for ordinary people to get something off their back and to express themselves.
When somebody sends in lyrics, do they say, I hear this as a disco tune, I hear this as a country tune?
Well, what happens in the process is, you send in your lyric, and they say, hey, this is a great lyric, we want to put this to music. And then they send you a little checkoff sheet, basically, that says, okay, I want the tempo on this to be, you know, fast, medium, or slow. I want it to be a rock song, a country song, or a ballad. And you just sort of check it off. And I'm not sure how much they probably pay a little bit of attention to that, but since they're dealing with people who don't know a lot about music, I think the musicians sort of take it upon themselves to compose the music to the lyrics, you know, as they see fit.
Do you have any favorites after all of the song poems you've listened to?
You know, there's different qualities about song poems that I sort of respond to. There are the funnier songs, like Jimmy Carter Says Yes is a, you know, a nice, sincere, but very funny song because it's a song about Jimmy Carter, but they sort of set it to a disco beat, and it's sort of, it's a little bit odd, and it definitely works. It's something that sticks in your head for days.
Can our government be competent? Jimmy Carter says yes. Jimmy Carter says yes. Can our government be honest? Jimmy Carter says yes. Jimmy Carter says yes. Can our government be decent and open? As the 39th president, he has spoken, yes. Jimmy Carter says yes.
And then there's Rod's stuff, which just, you know, I think is as good as the work of any musician I've heard. I mean, his stuff really stands out, and I listen to it all the time. There's a song called The Flitting Firefly, which uses the, it's sort of the metaphor for the firefly and fragility of life or something, and it's a really nice lyric, and Rod does the Mellotron stuff to it, and it's just really touching and beautiful.
Did you ever try to watch a firefly as it flickers in the dark? If you ever tried to catch it or to find its flickering spark, or tried to find out where it goes by following its light, your splash is gone, you lost your way and stumbled in the night. And so it is with fleeting loves, they sparkle for a while, but all too soon they lead you on your senses to beguile.
That's The Flitting Firefly by the song poem composer and performer Rod Keith. Rod Keith is one of the people profiled in Jamie Meltzer's documentary Off the Charts, The Song Poem Story.